and welcome to Normal Boring Free Birth for Normal Boring People. This is the podcast where we share, celebrate, and explore free birth stories from normal people like you. But today, we have a special guest. This isn't a free birth story. This is a talk with Kemi Birthjoy Johnson. Now, you might follow Kemi already on Instagram. If you don't, give her a follow. Kemi is a birth worker who is not afraid to tell it like it is, and today's no exception. We wanted to talk to Kemi about this idea of the nice midwife, that kind of concept where you're thinking, oh, it's not all midwives that are like this, sabotaging births. There are some nice ones out there. Maybe you think you're a nice one yourself. There are problems with this kind of thinking. We get into it. If you're someone who listens to our podcast and you're crossing your fingers, hoping that you're going to have a nice midwife and you're not really sure if you could free birth, we hope this episode inspires some questions and some thinking that you could really explore during your pregnancy. So sit back, enjoy our deep and meaty conversation with Kemi Johnson. Hello and welcome to Normal Boring Free Birth. You're our first special guest, which is nice.
What do you mean?
Yeah, well, obviously all the women telling their birth stories are amazing, but you're our first, like, you know, birth worker, special guest, additional extra. Because we talked about, we will have people do that, but we're just not sure when. And then it was very clear that we need to get you on, like, now, because we need to chat about
it. I feel very lucky then. I feel really, really lucky.
Definitely. Like, I was going to, you know, I was thinking, like, how do I introduce you? And I'll pass the mic over to you anyway in a second. But you were one of the first people that I was ever messaging anything to do about birth online, like in the dim and distant DMs. Mm. There's definitely me saying, you know, oh, hi, Kemi, thanks for everything. I think I might go into birth work, maybe. I'm not sure. And then here we are.
And here we are. Yeah. I'm sure, because Leonie and I, we started similarly. And so it just feels really amazing that I was privileged enough to see those green shoots in you both. Yeah, and imagine the powerful creations that are manifesting now, because we're all being authentic and acknowledging our why and our purpose. It's just as simple as that. It takes courage, but the three of us have that in common, clearly, and are driven to make things better for families, and that's what unites us, and it's beautiful.
That's it. Yeah, we're not afraid to say some shit about some shit as well along the way, which I'm very much looking forward to saying today.
Definitely.
So before we get into it, Kemi Johnson, welcome to Normal Boring Free Birth. Would you like to introduce yourself and let us know what you are about these days?
Yeah, interesting. Actually, what I'm about these days hasn't changed. It's just I'm refining it. So I've always been about birth being better for families. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing that came up for me when I was 15 years old, and my childhood had been quite messy. You know, there's lots of relationship things going on with my parents, and I just didn't know who I was. And then got this dream when I was 15. That I needed to be a midwife, which is odd because from the age of 4 to the age of 9, I'd been burnt alive every night. And it was a nightmare, recurrent nightmare that nobody could help me with. My mum had taken me to various specialists and no one could really help. And then when I was 9, my grandmother, who's a lay midwife, had crossed over. She just died.
Oh, wow.
And I think she assisted me because I just said, stop, and then didn't have any more nightmares.
Wow.
So there's a spiritual element to who I am and why, which obviously at the time was very scientific, trying to nail everything down to if it's visible, it is. If it's not, it isn't.
Yeah.
Obviously ignoring the fact that air isn't visible.
Yeah.
But I was trying to nail it all down, and like the spiritual was just all woven in. Thankfully ended up pursuing my calling. Went down the wrong road, which obviously I'll be talking about on my Instagram at some point. Wasted quite a bit of time being a student midwife to become a midwife and almost lost my mind because of the trauma that I was witnessing and the abuse, which was just way too triggering for me because of my childhood. And So, almost lost my mind. I was in the wrong place doing the wrong thing. But anyway, I'm humble enough to unlearn most of it and curious enough to learn better ways of doing things. And then, you know, because thank God there is some humility in there. People, just because I recognise who I am, people think I'm cocky. I just know who I am.
No, it's different.
It's different, isn't it, Leonie?
Yeah.
You know, and I think because I'm very... sure about who I am, it does confront people, but it's not really, this is much bigger than me or us.
No, I was just going to say, it just makes me feel like, you know, if people feel confronted by something, I really feel like it's bringing up something for them, and that's the issue. It's not that, you know, oh, look at you doing this thing and that's a terrible issue. It's, well, why are you having that response? That might be quite good to look into, you know, which
I think would be good.
Yeah, you know, which you're probably going to touch on a bit. But
And I think everyone being fully them, like you being fully you, Tori, I've seen it upsets people. Leonie being fully Leonie, people don't know what to do with themselves, right? They feel quite, you know, disconnected or discombobulated. But anyway, I'm a birth keeper, so I'm really useful in the birth room for what I don't do. You know, and people think, oh gosh, like you lie on the sofa while somebody gives birth. Actually, you need someone who will just lie down, shut the fuck up, and let you give birth, you know. So I'm really that person. And I'm a loud mouth, so I'm on Instagram upsetting people a lot. But it's not because I like upsetting people, it's because I want to wake people up.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's why I liked following you. And I for sure unfollowed you for a bit. I followed you back again because, you know, you are putting the conversations out there. You're presenting the content that's quite unsettling sometimes. But I do think that's good. It's what we need.
Yeah.
Because if you don't prod people a bit, nothing changes. You cannot spend your whole time like placating everyone and just being super nicey-nicey because that is doing harm, but with a nice face. Like that's not supportive. Right. My eyes.
I think we've just evolved beyond that now, being polite and nice and not hurting anyone and leaving them in the fire. My daughter-in-law unfollows me. I don't even think she's followed me back. My latest grandson's 5 months, so I'm sure she's not followed me yet. I feel it is a bit, my content can be a bit Marmite and in your face. Yeah. And so
you need
time off from it. Come on, Leonie.
I was the opposite though. No, because when I was pregnant with, I think it's when I was pregnant, or no, maybe just before, but I didn't unfollow you when I was pregnant because I needed to know what was going on, because
I get
you can, that. You can tell, like you just start unlocking and going down the rabbit hole and it's like holy shit, there's so much more to see. What else is there, you know, just wake up and just shine that light on it. Yeah, thank you for just saying what's happening in front of our eyes.
Thank you because I noted that you stayed with it, and what also was interesting about Leonie is she then doubled down, so she'd come into the DMs and ask more questions about unsettling posts. I've actually got goosebumps. That's what I live for. That's what I'm here for. So yeah, thank you.
So we invited you on today because I feel like recently there was even more of a splurge on your Instagram about news stories, news reports of things that were happening that were just traumatic, you know, dangerous, fatal to women, families and babies during pregnancy and birth. And for that reason, that topic again of midwives came up because I see you battle with this a lot. I battle with this a lot too. And I'm sure Leonie does too. But it's like you can't talk about something online to do with a midwife without people jumping up and going, oh, no, 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 but there are good ones. There are nice ones. There's not all, it's not all of us. And, you know, we're a free birth podcast here. So maybe talking about midwives is a little bit of a tenuous link. But I think for some women, if you're sat on the fence and you're thinking, oh, do I free birth or do I just hope I get a nice midwife? That's why I want to talk about nice midwives. I want to talk about that as a kind of concept and entity and idea, because I think there's a lot of problems attached to that. I think there's a lot of misleading information around that. And then obviously some women decide to free birth because of their midwife situation and how they're treated. But again, it comes up with like, yeah, but not all of us. So I want to go down that road a bit and pick it apart with yourself, because I know you're also quite passionate about that too.
Yeah, I am.
Let's start. So shall we start with, well, do you want to kick us off, Leonie? I feel like, yeah, would you want to add to that?
Well, I just think to begin with, maybe we could talk about what we mean by nice midwives, because there's nice midwives
really
and there's
good.
Nice midwives.
What is it? Yeah.
So what does that mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really good. I think we've each got the view on it. Leonie, would you like to say first what you feel a nice midwife is?
A nice midwife. Yeah.
So yeah.
A genuinely nice midwife is somebody who listens to the woman, who can feel, who can read the situation, read the person, who knows when to shut up and not say something, who knows when to act and knows what to offer. And so I guess I'm talking about skills and sort of personality traits, but somebody who works with integrity, and by that I mean they're not afraid to say no, I'm not doing that, that's harmful.
Yeah.
They will offer their skills and let somebody else make a decision if it's what they want to receive or not. So being a good human, I don't know, but then that's tenuous, isn't it? Because I think a lot of people think they're being good, and that's complicated. Yeah, I think, I mean, the biggest one is listening, I think. Listening to the other person.
I love the way you put
really
that first.
Feeling them.
Really listening, because I feel, I think I'm a nice, well, I can't call myself a midwife because I took myself off from the nursing and midwifery council. But I think I'm nice because of my listening. That's basically what I wanted to say, Leonie, is that when you came up with that first, for me, that is what comes first. So it's the listening, and I do properly listen. And I would add, and I respect them as well. So it's listening and respect for me. Those are the nice things about me, in inverted commas. So that's what I would like to receive as somebody giving birth. I would like to know that I was being listened to and that I was being respected.
Yeah.
Sick, isn't it?
That's it. And I mean, how do we know that? Because, I mean, I suppose we've still got to stick to trying to define what a nice midwife is. But I think, because for me, I hate the term so much, because I think I only ever hear that being used when someone is trying to justify their midwife because they don't like something that's happening, but it's okay because they're nice, or it's okay because they're, you know, they've been, you know, what I hear in my inbox, it's mainly, oh, my midwife's really pro home birth. You know, she does. She's saying it's fine. I don't have to have a vaginal exam. She's saying it's fine. I don't have to have this, that, and the other. She's really, really great. Then, I've hit 42 weeks, and now she wants me to do this, that, and the other because I'm going beyond guidelines. So suddenly, my nice midwife is now not so nice because I'm being actually, but it's worse because if someone is nice, you are so much more likely to want to do what they're saying because you feel like you've got this kind of connection, this sort of almost like friendship or whatever. And if they're kind of going like, you know, oh, come on, you know, I've helped you doing this, that and the other, you know, maybe let's just consider a sweep. That's not nice to me. Like that's just being as disruptive and damaging as one that you might describe as being really anti-home birth and anti-everything, whatever. They're just doing it in
a
way.
But it's kind of worse.
Yeah.
It's kind of worse.
I think it's worse.
Okay, so we agree because it's, and we don't have to agree. We're all very different. Yeah, but I think for us to be able to agree on that is meaningful for the listener. The fact is, if somebody tells you, kind of nails their colours to the wall and you can see them, then you've got an opportunity to change direction, pivot, choose differently, etc. But when somebody tells you, which is a really one of the biggest problems, Tori, is people relaxing into midwives and obstetricians that are considered nice, just to have the rug pulled out from under them when they're at their most vulnerable, you know, towards the end of the pregnancy. And that's what I hear a lot of times. That's, I do, I am kind of that person that when somebody says, oh, my midwife's really nice, I say, okay, so what makes them nice? have you asked them about this, that and the other? You know, so I kind of ask a lot of questions when somebody says they're nice. I think I did a live probably about 2 or 3 weeks ago when I was talking with a mother who really liked her midwives. It was a home birth situation, and her midwives, the really nice ones, managed to basically clamp and cut the cord immediately to help the baby. And I know, I think that was quite a difficult situation because I couldn't let that live go out with people thinking that nice midwives can deprive your child of a third of their blood complement for no reason. That was quite confronting live, you know.
I think it goes, you know, it begs the question, can you have like a nice midwife who's working within a system that is setting them up in such ways that we are fully aware are really damaging? You know, if the training says quickly clamp and cut a cord because it's better for the baby, I mean, we know that's like nonsense, but if they believe it, they don't feel they're doing something detrimental. They just feel like they're just fulfilling their role and doing their job. And they're answering to that kind of higher power for them. So I suppose, you know, for me, if someone's truly like nice or just, you know, a good support, they're just, they're only ever putting you in the center of the decisions that you're making, the moves that you're making, and it's nothing else. It's not what they think is best. It's not what they think an employer would say is best. It is only ever you. And I, that's certainly not what I see. But yeah, it's very difficult then, isn't it? Because if someone is, you know, nice and friendly and they feel that's the way, then that can be really misleading and a difficult situation to be in yourself. But it's, how do you know that? But how do you know you're going to have that as a situation, as a mum?
Exactly. And that's where we have to encourage each other to work with our intuition and with that little nagging, that if you've got a little nagging doubt there, we have to follow where that goes. The fact is that we are taught in, well, in my academic learning in preparation for midwifery, they definitely had a module on how to talk to parents. My shorthand is to get them to do what you want.
Yeah.
But that's not how it was presented. No. I wish I could find the course notes. But basically what we came out of that module knowing is how to coerce. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I was being trained back in the noughties. Coercion wasn't a crime in the UK till 2015. Mm. So when they were teaching it, I guess they were, you know, how to smooth the cogs of communication. Yeah. So you can get them to do what you want. So that's what we were taught, and certainly that's what was modelled. Mm-hmm. So when we were out in practice placements, it's all, hello, love, just pop yourself onto here. Just oh, yourself, you know, just pop your knickers off and, you know, all of that disgusting, slimy behaviour. Oh. Yeah, I can see Leone reacting. But that's what we were taught and that's what was modelled. And so that's what we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
What is how traditionally we speak to children, isn't it? Well, not we, but how we as a society approach children. How can we get the children to do what we want? What tactics and tricks and hacks, what parenting hacks can we share around so that we can just get somebody to comply, to get these children to be obedient? Because then it makes our life more easy and we can get done what we need to get done. And it's so fucked up that we don't just give people space to do what they need to do. Okay, it's slightly different with children, but, you know, it's the same kind of principle, isn't it? And I think
it's exactly like that.
That you saying about asking questions, because I think, you know, the niceness is so surface level, isn't it? It's very superficial. It's kind of nicey, smiley, often quite high tone, high pitched. Grounded, not deep, not actually under the surface. And I think asking those questions is so important. So if you're maybe on the fence, you're listening, you may be on the fence and you're having those appointments with a midwife, ask those questions like, what is your opinion on free birth? Do you support it? Would you be all right with just waiting in the car until after the placenta is born? Like what is going to be your response to that? And you can really gauge like whether somebody is acting with integrity or if their niceness is coming because they're being a good girl and they're doing what they were told and they're just keeping things smooth until the crunch point, in which case everything's going to fall apart because it's not got a solid foundation. That relationship is just based on shit and you need to be able to figure that out. And that's really hard because we're so trusting, because we don't question whether we want people to be nice to us, we want to say the good things so that we get people on board, especially in pregnancy when we don't want to fight, we're not geared up that way, and nor should we. So of course you're not going to challenge people if they give you a hint of niceness, but really it's not safe. It's not in the long run, you've got to be questioning it still and keeping your wits about you, because for me, it feels like a trap. You know, you're in a dangerous situation. It's a bit of a knife's edge because if you do something that they don't like and they turn on you, that can happen very quickly and that can leave you in the shit. Yeah. So if you're there getting comfortable, like keep your wits about you because you're still in a dangerous situation. Even if the midwife is nice, they're still operating within the system. And as you touched upon earlier, can they ever really act with integrity? I don't think they can, not fully, not within that system. That's my view.
Not fully. It's too scary. It's like, you know, we all have this survival mechanism. So, you know, can somebody act appropriately if they think they're drowning? Can somebody act appropriately if their child's under threat? So there's the humanity aspect I get, but it's just that I feel in our society, acknowledging that when a woman is bringing another human onto the planet, she's at her most vulnerable. If we could all keep an eye on each other so that, you know, if there is somebody acting inappropriately, we would protect that woman and her baby from that person. I think that was the original idea of us having social births, you know, not necessarily having ourselves in the hands of one individual. I thought that was the point, but it seems that the groupthink is now in favour of protecting the group rather than protecting the woman and her baby. And that's more than concerning, because it seems to be getting worse, not better. We saw mass formation psychosis happening over the last few years. I think it's been happening longer in maternity care than what we saw happening worldwide in the last few years. And that's what we need protection from. The Nursing and Midwifery Council have a code that ought to protect us from that. You know, the part of the code that says a woman and her baby come to the centre of the care, regardless of whether you agree with it, regardless of what the multidisciplinary team think, it's up to the woman and her bodily autonomy and the fact and her parental rights over her child. that's what is covered in, you know, places in the Nursing and Midwifery Council Code. The reality is that even the Nursing and Midwifery Council now do not support a midwife if the midwife keeps the woman in the centre of their care.
Yeah, everything you're saying, it gets me to thinking, though, about the potential for a kind of dangerous dynamic, though, because if we look at more the system and we go, okay, it's not always the individual. There can be individuals within the system that have the full intention of supporting a woman and, you know, and just putting that person in the centre of their whole experience. And if that's what we accept to be true, but we're saying, right, okay, but the system isn't supporting that. The system's putting pressure on that midwife. They're not supporting them if they do make a decision outside of the box and whatever else. But then you, as the one who is pregnant, surely that creates some dynamic where you are looking to this person who's putting themselves on the line for you. And then you are put in the position where you're made to feel as if you owe them something. You need to make effort for them. Like, what wouldn't you do then if you were suddenly asked? You know, I think it can be dangerous then, because if this person turns around and goes, oh, all these things I've done for you, you know, I've let you do this. I've let you do this, 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 and this. Yeah. And it goes against everything. And now please just maybe this one thing give me, so, you know. And then suddenly, like, that just feels so dangerous. Like, can you ever really truly be in a safe situation when that's the case, when you could end up feeling as if you're having to be thankful for the fact that this person is kind of endangering their position so much? Like, what about that dynamic to deal with while you're pregnant or in labour?
That's quite a dynamic. But there again, should we stay on the register if we're ever steering near that kind of scenario where we're basically baiting and switching? But I think, you know, when you explore the nuance of, and the clarity of the Nursing and Midwifery Council, we're supposed to be protected from that as mothers. Yeah. I you know, when you look at it, I can't see many holes in it that would permit it, you know, that you'd be coerced just because it would be more comfortable for the caregiver. So with that in mind, I think we have an issue because our society is accepting that this can happen to a woman with no redress. And so, of course, it leaves a woman who ideally wanted a midwife or a birth keeper or somebody to witness them and to be a pair of hands available just in case. Ideally, they wanted that. But it's not available because society is not seeking redress for people that act criminally in the birth space. There's nothing happens. No one pays. So what do we do then? You know, you've got some of us that will free birth anyway. And they've got some of us free birth for lack of a better idea. Because they can see that they can see already that that's the safest way for them to give birth. But some people say, well, it would be safest, but I wish I could just have somebody sat in the car just in case I need them. And then you've got companies that won't even do that. Like, oh, if you're going to have us sat in the car, then you don't have us at all.
Yeah, I've seen that in write-ups from, because I think each trust will have a slightly different slant on it, but I've certainly seen some guidelines that people have sent me going, well, if you're just not, if you're making them sit in another room, they can leave if they want to, because they just feel like, well, what am I doing? And I don't want to be responsible for something happening because I wasn't in the room and you've told me not to be. So it's sometimes that idea of like, oh yeah, I'll just get them to sit in the other room. It just won't.
Yeah, but she's not responsible.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, but it can work. Like, for independent midwives, do it in a heartbeat. Yes. Birth keepers do it in a heartbeat. Private midwives, it sounds, the feedback I'm getting is that they won't do it. And NHS midwives, some will, some won't. And I think it being, and so this speaks to there being different levels of respect for bodily autonomy. Mm-hmm. You know, I shouldn't have to have you staring at my vagina. I shouldn't have to have that. Why should I have that? But we're not left the choice. You know, to be able to walk off and leave a woman unsupported, completely unsupported, just because you don't like the idea, because you're offended by being asked to sit in the car. You know, you're not responsible if you're sat in the car. How can you be sat in a car outside and responsible? It's obvious you won't be made responsible. What they're going to do is say, oh, she asked you to sit in the car, but why did you go? Well, because I respect her and she has bodily autonomy. So we're getting it twisted in our society and it's leaving women and their babies really vulnerable.
And it's just so ironic, isn't it? Like the fear of the litigation of, you know, being held responsible in case something happens by going in a car, yet all harm that is being committed and, you know, being prosecuted for that is just completely on its head.
And I, you know, when you just said completely on its head, I think that's the point. We do have things backwards in our society. There seems to be a lot of reverse speak. Caregivers, for instance, you're giving care doesn't mean that we have to accept it. Mm-hmm. It's very rapey to think that you can say, I want to be with you under these circumstances, in this scenario, I'm going to do this, I'm not going to do that. It's not for us to call the shots as caregivers. It's for her to decide, her, the birthing person, to decide, what do I want to receive? I don't want to receive that. Okay, well, if you force it on me, it's rape.
Mm-hmm.
You've just got a very rapey maternity services. So why would you want to choose that?
In the name of safety, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it starts in pregnancy, though, doesn't it? Because you're in no way is it ever presented as optional having an appointment. It's here's your appointment. This is when you must attend. And I will see you then. There's never a question. Mm-hmm. There's never a question of, you know, and I remember the language from, you know, my pregnancies. It's very much like, oh, hop up on the bed now, love, and we'll listen to baby. And it's never a question, or it rarely is a question of even asking to do that. It's very much an expectation.
Yeah.
And then if you do decline, I don't think that that comes without a repercussion. You know, I think it's a lot to expect, because I see this idea talked about online and I question it more and more these days, this idea of, okay, just say no and just decline and that's okay, because it's not as simple as that ever.
It's never that.
You can say no and you get met with, you know, oh, okay, I just need you to justify this, really. I need you to explain why. And then you can do that. And then you can be, oh, right, you've triggered now an appointment with a consultant, or you've got to do something else now. You've got
to
jump
in. That's right.
It's never a simple case of no. And then how are you feeling during that experience? You're now suddenly having to fight, justify it. And it's like this whole idea, you know, no is a complete sentence. It's not. It's the start of a fight with someone that you're going to have to do
that's right.
Or during labour, you know, and then
put
yourself in that position. Like, I wish especially, I want more transparency around that.
And I think you're right. It's a conversation that needs to be had. And, you know, I'm going to say the obvious caveat, especially if you're black or brown. You know, and it's not even a case of, you know, you're being othered, because you might say, a black woman might say no to a black midwife. You've still got shit to head. You've got shit ahead. So I think, again, this brings it back to the lack of respect for the woman. It's just rank misogyny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're expected to be a good girl. You declined. Okay, just open your knees. Okay, you hold her down. Yeah, I'm being triggering. This is what's happening to us. I just hold her down then. Oh, well, you know, put your knees against your ears. but I don't want to resolve shoulder dystocia with my knees against my ears. It's the worst way to resolve it. Mm. Yeah, well, you know, do you want a dead baby or not?
Yeah, exactly. So
it's rape.
Exactly. It's no isn't a full sentence when you're met with the response of, but do you want your baby to die? I mean... Yeah, that's just not going to fly then, is it? Like, that's not enough. I think that's the issue for me a lot of the time is, like, I think women can be made to feel like they have the tools to navigate this and they can take their midwife and then they can structure it and reform them and work with the system and make it fit and do the things and then they can get through unscathed. And I personally don't think that that's... I think that's highly unlikely. I don't think there's a level of safety or respect within someone who's working within a system who is seeing, you know, having to respond to some kind of accreditation. I don't think that it's possible. I don't.
And Tori, I hear you. And you know, I could be guilty of the not all midwives hashtag because I know there's a handful of them out there that won't make the children's services referral just because you're free birth and won't, you know, but it's just really hard to find them. You know, because I'm hearing it all the time now, like once a week I'll be contacted by a woman who exercised her right to free birth and then is treated really nicely, really nicely by the postpartum midwives or community midwives, whatever. And then the very next day they're referred. So they'll be in your face saying, oh, you clever girl. You went and gave birth without us. Imagine that. Isn't your baby beautiful? So healthy. It makes me nauseous. And then the very next day, you get a phone call from Children's Services. So, I'm inclined to agree with you, Tori. There's no point me talking about a handful of midwives that don't throw a family under a bus when the vast majority of them will do it because they're automatons. They look at their salary or their standing and they feel that's worth more to me than respecting the woman's right to free birth, and then they throw her under the bus.
Go on, Leonie.
No, you can tell by my face, can't you? There's just this an old saying which has been going around my mind quite a lot recently. I've just been sitting with it, and it's something like, it only takes a drop of poison to turn the milk bad. So you wouldn't drink the milk if there's a single drop of poison in it. And I'm trying to think, you know, does this fit? And I think it does. I think it does with the whole system because... You don't know who you're dealing with, and that's such a common reason, isn't it, for women and families choosing free birth? They don't know, and they don't want to run the risk. They don't know if it's going to be somebody who's going to overtly harm them or nicey harm them, and it's dangerous. Like feels a dangerous situation. The whole thing's turned sour. It doesn't matter that
the whole thing has turned sour. I remember there was a time when you could, well, almost trust a paramedic. I don't know a single family that have invited paramedics to a birth in this last year, 2023, so in the last few months, that the paramedics haven't made a children's services referral.
They haven't, they have done every time.
Every time.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
So what do we do?
Well, you can't get round it, can you?
Fuck them all or what?
Yeah, I mean, I think having an awareness that that's going to be something you have to face is surely like just a reality, isn't it? That just, you know, maybe. I think part of your prep is even just like, this is likely to happen. Don't get really surprised by it. You probably, someone's going to report you. And then have an awareness of that, because what is the alternative? You know, the alternative is... go down the path that you don't want to go down for all these number of reasons. I think that's what I feel is at the crux of a lot of the conversation around this, is just knowing where it all goes and understanding where all the choices lead, rather than, it's one of the things I hate most about the whole, like, on, you know, not all midwives thing, is it's just But we don't know who's going to be there. We don't have an understanding of who that person's going to be. I saw someone the other day say something online of like, she'd written like a huge birth plan and she said, I don't know who's going to come through the door. And I just thought, how awful. Like, I can't bear the thought of not knowing. Like, I'm in labour, I've got a baby half out of me maybe, and there's someone who comes through the door and I don't know who it is. That's a problem. Like,
it's
gotta think about that. Like, how are you gonna feel about that? And I think not. It's just painting a picture in your head that doesn't match up with reality is the thing. And I think the get out can be not all midwives, some are nice, and that almost gives your brain a little out, and you go, oh, I don't have to think about the alternatives because they're not all bad. Some of them are nice. And I just think, like, no, don't assume though. Like, don't assume they're gonna be nice because that's detrimental to you, really.
Yeah, or even like sometimes people will send me things with the best intentions and they'll say, oh, but it's not all bad, gives us hope, put it out. I think very carefully before I share, you know, the one-off story where somebody was actually nice or a midwife was actually nice or helpful, because I don't want that ideal. Quite rightly, I understand why a woman who's vulnerable and pregnant, heavily pregnant and fearful, would want to cling to that. Oh, well, I might have that one person walk into my birth experience and be helpful. I don't want to give that impression that it's more prevalent than it actually is, because it isn't. Another thing just to say as well, Tori, you know, like, I've been guilty of it in the past, like, no, you know, just confront them, you've got the law on your side, etc. There's certain aspects of our society where they've already had a brush with children's services. They call it known by children's services. If you're known by children's services and then a referral is made just because you lawfully gave birth to your baby at home without medical assistance or without the NHS. And a referral's made, you're not going to be that person where the referral's closed.
No.
You're not.
It is awful.
So there are people in our society that are more likely to have that happen to them because of the genuine prejudices that society has.
Well, it's like what you were saying about the code, doesn't it? Like, doesn't matter if people don't follow it. It doesn't matter what the code says if no one's getting pulled up on anything.
So what do we do?
It matters, but do you know what I mean? No,
it's
the people.
Yeah.
It's, well, you see, like, Leonie, you mentioned something earlier as well, which triggered a thought in me. Like, okay, so, you know, I've kind of thought that we have our own, do we need to create our own paramedics so that we don't call the state ones? So, you know, it's honestly, it's like, you know, sometimes a little bit of help is needed. There's lots of us that are disgruntled or hurt or cannot align with the system. There are not enough of us to be able to call somebody else. I think because of this idea of them being a monopoly, you know, they think they're setting the standard of what is right and what is wrong when it comes to birth choices, etc. Why don't we just have our own paramedics?
Well, they're just a modern blip, aren't they, really? Like, if you look at the whole history of birth and medicine and health, and sure, some things have got better, but if you just focus in on these few decades, actually all of the things which we're coming back to now, I think something that you said ages ago, Kemi, you know, you say these things and they really stick, but something like, can't we should all learn how to set bones? And I thought, that's interesting, because, and it was something when I first came across free birth, I was like, well, you know, what's going to happen with the cord? Oh, I could just sort it out. There's no great big mystery. Like, okay, that's cool. I can just do that. well, let's just do it then. Let's learn those skills, relearn, remember those skills.
Remember those skills, exactly, because they used to be community skills. And I feel we need to restore them again. That's why I always celebrate Billy Harrigan when she says, just be a more useful human. That's like her catchphrase. You know, she said, why shouldn't the hairdresser know how to resolve a breech baby being born? What? Why is it that, you know, oh, no, you can't do this. We can all do it. And I feel like restoring that knowledge to the general population is paramount.
That's it. Yeah, taking it out of the medical system and putting it back in the community with people who your next door neighbour could be useful. You know, I think that would be fantastic, because we don't have enough people as it is anyway within the medical system to even do it. I want to ask you, Kemi, like, so, you know, so I'm pregnant. I'm hearing all this shit about midwives. I'm starting to feel really uneasy. I'm starting to feel like even the ones who are pro home birth are not fully on board. They're not really going to support my choices. Perhaps I'm feeling uneasy about it. What do you recommend to someone who's in that space, who's kind of going, oh, I feel like I'm just starting to see you through the curtain a bit and it's not really what I feel I need? What do you think is a good move for them to make?
It's funny. That's a really good question. I've been trying to, that question came to me like a couple of nights ago, and I wasn't overthinking, but I was struggling to sleep.
I've been visiting you in your dreams.
You have been. So it's really upsetting. And I know some people get really annoyed with me when I say it, but I feel like preconception, you need to get your ducks in a row. Yeah. So am I in my best health? You know, what's my setup? What's my setup financially? Because I think we've shot ourselves in the foot here in the UK, because we've been lied to that maternity care is free. And it's not, right?
No way.
It's really not.
It's
very expensive. And, you know, we're paying a shed load for it. So it's not free. But because it's free at the point of access, we are kind of lulled into this sense that we shouldn't be spending a penny on birth prep or supplements or, you know, detoxing or being fit or any of those things. So I always say preconception, get your ducks in a row. You're having a whole human. I was screamed at by a mother the other day because I suggested that she might want to spend some money on having a conversation about birth prep. And she screamed at me. She said, how do you expect me to find that kind of money? And I responded to her. I said, well, how do you expect to raise a whole human?
Yeah.
Like, you're pregnant. Mm. Okay. So it's just this idea that, oh, you know, just because having sex and producing a child for many of us is free, that means that every single thing attached to that should be free.
Yeah.
But it's not. So I now suggest start putting money aside. You know, you might be used to going on your holiday every year, but you're going to have to start thinking that through, because you're actually raising new humans. So it's about preconception prep in every single way, you know, psychologically. If you've got, you know, mother issues, I think you need to, and you're seeking to be a mother.
Yeah.
You've got mommy issues, but you're seeking to be a mother. You might need to give some time to sorting out your mother issues.
Oh,
now, did I do any of this? No, I didn't. I didn't do any of that. But I'm just saying, now, surveying the landscape, I feel like this is something that we really need to be considering. We really need to be looking into how we prepare. And then once and who we're having children with. Sorry, I don't know if you meant for me to go this far back.
You've got a few steps back, but I love it. Yeah, but keep going. Yeah, your choice of partner.
How
hell
these
yeah.
Children with. Yeah, exactly. What are their beliefs? Are you on the same page? Do you share values? Should you be raising another generation together? Then it's just these really deep questions, like. You know, what do you eat? Where do you source it? Is it toxic? Is it clean? You know, have you got cravings? Where do they come from? Mm-hmm. You know, most of our cravings are emotional. You've got to explore that. You've got to do all of those things. And then we get to the point of, okay, so we're now pregnant. How do we maintain a pregnancy? Who are we going to see? who are we choosing to refer to? You know, when we do that self-referral to that hospital, or we're seeing these midwives, why are we tolerating any kind of BS from these people? So do you feel safe with somebody who's going to lie to you and tell you that there isn't the option of having a home birth? How many times do people go for their booking appointment and home birth isn't even mentioned? And then they'll say something, well, as it's your first baby, there's a birth center or whatever. Why aren't we putting them up on that? Like, where does that belief come from? So what other beliefs have you got? So it's the thing that Leonie was really focusing on, like the questions. Yeah, you know, think about what questions you're going to ask. The actual preparation itself, you know, I'm obsessed with it. Have you got a hypertoned pelvic floor? Because we've got a lot of people that really prepare well, but it can be too well. Yeah, so we haven't got a pelvic floor that moves in both directions. It just is hypertoned or tight, right? That's important. You know, all of us that work with pregnant mothers and prepare them towards birth, we should know this by now. We should understand how the body works, that the baby needs to be let through the pelvic floor. So, yeah, what movements are you making? Again, what you're eating? How are you spending your evening? Are you obsessing over any food? Find out why that is. Are you deficient in minerals and supplements? So, yeah, I'm going to the nth, but this is because if we don't attend to these things, we become more dependent on the system that we currently have. Yes. And the system that we currently have isn't fit for purpose. So I'm suggesting that we go all out to make sure that we don't have to use it. That's my point. So,
yeah.
And it's psychological preparation. Yeah. It's not just physical, it's psychological. What do you believe? Why do you believe it? Where did that come from? Let's pull that up. And there's ways of doing it, but of course, most of it you might need to pay for. And you might need to pay for that instead of go on the holiday, buy a new car, do a renovation. I'm just suggesting that we need to put in a lot more effort because our maternity services is really so harmful right now. So we just have to work harder to avoid the harm.
Yeah, it's being responsible earlier, isn't it? It's being responsible and taking responsibility far earlier than just at the birth, even if you're thinking, yeah, I'm going to free birth, I'll take responsibility for that. Take responsibility for your health. Like you say, that's your choices in life, that kind of thing. But I'm at that point where I'm now trying to connect these two dots for a lot of people in terms of, no, it's not about the birth. It is so much more, like you say, about your mindset. You know, if you're a people pleaser, like a hard live and die people pleaser by life, you are going to do that during labor. You know, that's such a huge part of it. And again, like your health, and like you say, if you want to avoid the medical system, then perhaps take better care of yourself, you know, perhaps eat better, do these things that then mean you don't have to engage. But it's making people realize, because those things don't sound like birth prep. They sound like self-help, life, boring, you know, too much effort. Yeah. That's nothing to do with birth. Just tell me how to get this baby out. And then what if something happens? Yeah. I mean, again, it's the... I'm interested to hear your view of, like, what if something happens? Because that's the big question, isn't it, that so many get stuck on? Because then they go, what if something happens? So I need a midwife. So that's the area, I think, where a lot do feel very stuck. So how do you broach that? Because, like, that is way down the line in terms of prep, like you say, because you can start way over here. But to get to that, like, penultimate bit.
I always recommend your offerings, all of you that offer into the free birth community, I straight off, you need to be considering this and this, because I've stretched back for the long game, etc. But you know, at the end of the day, birth works the majority of the time. And you know, I just feel like we need, as mothers, as parents, to be a bit more prepared to do things rather than have a vain imagining of something awful and then immediately see somebody running in with a bag. I feel like there's stuff that we can do for ourselves and our partners prepare too. So I feel like there are offerings out there. You both have got them. This podcast is one of them. There's ways to prepare. But I feel in our country, here in the UK, we're so spoon-fed and nanny-stated that when you're vulnerable and pregnant, all you want to do is put your feet up and eat chocolate for me to then give you homework, in inverted commas. I know, you know, people get upset with that. But the reality is, with the current maternity services that we have at the moment, I don't think if anyone wants a physiological birth, that they can avoid learning all that all of us offer into the free birthing space. I think you can't avoid it if you're seeking the best outcome. What if something happens? You know, a lot of people are having an awful lot of harm done to them to prevent, or just in case something happens. And, you know, obviously I'm going to be, you know, overt again, because I don't tiptoe around. Sometimes babies die and it appears like nothing's happened and the baby dies, okay? So people go into the system just in case, on the off chance, they're one of those 2 in 1,000 where the baby doesn't make it. But then that baby is extracted by instruments, has skull fractures, you know, damage to their neurons or neural network. Do we prefer that? A mother's the one who drew my attention to that. She said, I just want to know how you'd respond if, you know, the baby needed help. So I said, well, what we're taught to do is to call help for the help to come. She said, well, I want you to know that I don't perceive what they do as helpful. I might just want my baby to cross over in peace rather than having their chest bone broken. So she made me think. She said, so I don't want you to automatically assume, but I want you to call for help.
Wow. Yeah.
Really good conversations to have. She said, I might want to choose how my baby dies or how I die. I don't want you to presume that I want somebody to be doing chest compressions for the next hour.
It's a really powerful point, isn't it? Because that, I don't think, ever gets considered. And obviously, it's a real tough thing to get your head around. But again, why is that so assumed of how exactly you would want that, you know, dealt with? I mean, of course, you know, mothers want their babies to be well and safe. But again, it kind of goes away from that intuition thing again, though, doesn't it? It's like, but what do they feel? We still need to allow for that space of, but what do you feel in that moment, rather than just making huge assumptions. But it's a hard one, but I do think it's an important conversation to have. And I know, I mean, you, Leonie, are always, I love your conversations around, you know, what the baby's feeling and thinking and their perspective of that. And I think that's something you touch on a lot in your kind of work, and I like that. Is there, how do you feel about this whole conversation in terms of sort of that perspective? You know, does this come up a lot for yourself, do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, I think people don't ask, do they? They just assume that their way of perceiving the world and the situation would be what everybody else might do. So for a start, we can just ask people what they might like. That's really basic. But I think we have to allow for individuality, and nobody knows where anybody else has come from. Nobody knows what your relationship is like with your baby and what your baby's telling you, what your baby might be calling for. I don't know of anybody, but I imagine there might be somebody who their baby is very ill and it's not right for them. It might be the right thing. I know that's really, really hard to talk about and to get our heads around, but it might be the right thing to not accept help. Like you were saying before, like, you've got to weigh up those situations. Like, is it going to be more harmful having somebody try and drag a child back to life for a few minutes? Like, that's not okay for some people, but unless we ask those questions, but we don't, do we? We don't talk about death. We don't talk about, well, is it going to be more harm than good? But we have to, I think.
It's a really good and grown-up question.
It's hard.
It's a good grown-up question. It is hard. But I feel like a lot of the trauma that we go through with life and death transitions is stuff being done without our consent or without forethought or with the presumption of what would be a necessary action under certain situations. I think that potentially is the biggest problem we're having with society at the moment, which is why people are having traumatic deaths and so many traumatic births.
Yeah, it really brings that to mind. You know, those situations where we hear about elderly people, for example, they've had cardiac arrest at home or something, and they just have these intense like breaking of ribs, they're really old, it's their time, like all this interference and meddling, and nobody asked them if they wanted it. And I think coupled with that, the lack of humility of people to be able to say, I'm sorry, I did that without asking you, and that wasn't okay. Like, how many times do we hear that? Again, bringing it back to children, we don't hear that with children either. I'm sorry, I just shoved your shoe on your foot. Okay, you needed to get your shoes on.
That's
but also, I did that to your body, and I'm really sorry that wasn't okay for you. Like, we don't have that kind of attitude that people think that, you know, no means just hurry up and do it quicker so that they don't notice. You can get it done before they say no again, like we see that with children.
So true.
Yeah.
Like, how can we help someone avoid this kind of trap, say, then, of like the nice kind of midwife? What would be the kind of leaving point to make in terms of like, how can someone really not fall down that trap and be led astray by someone who they think is being seemingly nice, you know?
I mean, maybe this is highlighting my own personal trust issues, but I would be inclined to say, don't completely fall into trust with somebody, like still maintain a bit of emotional distance. Like, you can have a relationship with, if you are choosing midwifery care from the system or from anybody, you can still choose to have a relationship with them, but just don't lose yourself. Don't completely melt into a puddle and expect them to scoop you up, you know. Keep that partnership, because you are two equals. Keep that partnership strong. And if you need to walk away, then you've not been completely, left in a pile on the floor. You haven't left yourself in a pile on the floor, and don't expect that they can come and truly help you and truly save you, because you've got to be able to stand on your own two feet. So I think have a relationship with people, but don't lose yourself.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm curious from your perspective too, because, you know, you're someone that stepped away from being in that kind of mainstream system. If we've got someone listening, and I feel like we do have some midwives who listen to us because we've had some reviews. But if we've got someone listening I'm laughing because we've got a terrible review from a midwife who said, like, oh, you're not balanced. You don't talk about, you know, the balance of it all. And I mean, why would we? We're a free birth podcast.
You're a free birth podcast. I want to celebrate your bad review. Amazing. you're in the club. It's a rite of passage.
Good.
But like, I am, you know,
congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I thought it was quite funny, really. But like, you know, I'm compassionate to those who do get into this profession because they do genuinely want to help. But if someone's listening and they really feel like, oh, like, I am a nice midwife, you know, like, I am a nice one, like, what would you give them as a little bit of advice there? Because I feel like you'd have a bit of gold for them to listen to. Because, I mean, how can you be nice and stay in that system? What could they do?
There's an inkling. I can almost guarantee that they've got an inkling that they're not supposed to be there. You're going to need to take courage and follow your true calling.
And do you just think it is a case of, but you can do this a different way, you can support birth in a different way, you know, you can be in a different guise, such as yourself, you know, or people doing similar, like, is that just to you, that feels like the clearer, that's the better way to be?
Yeah, Yeah. Get your shelf stacking job to fund your courses on how to resolve childhood dysphagia properly, how to enable a baby to be born breech properly, how to stem a hemorrhage, how to give IV fluids. Yeah. You can give rectal fluids, and how to set bones, you know, how to close a wound that is bleeding. You can sort all of that out for yourself. You do not need to go to the NHS and be spoon-fed stuff that often can cause more harm than good. Yeah, you don't have to do that. Yeah, it's not the easy road. It's like I'm going to be sharing a module with the Alouf, which is Oasis, which is a birthing place in Granada. So I'm going to go and share a module there. You've got, with Vanessa Brooks, you've got Billy Harrigan helping people to prepare. You've got Robin Lim helping people to prepare. You've got The Farm that has got places to prepare. You've got Wise Woman Birth School with the amazing Evelyn Lynch. So there are loads of different places that you could pay for. Now, at the moment, what are we paying? £9,000 a year to be trained by the NHS to get the midwifery degree. You could just find another way to make your income so that you can be taught better skills, life-giving skills that don't cause harm, that don't mean you need to be part of this club, part of this ring, this mafia that are harming women, birthing people and their children. You can do things differently. And I know not everyone's ready to do that, in which case you can try your chances. A very famous, beautiful midwife we registered the other day, Dr. Rachel Reed. We're all heading that way. Come and join us.
Well, I hope that's helped people feel a little bit more, I don't know, like settled and level. I mean, I think the only thing that is ever a sticking point with me is that, like, I do, like, while I agree that there can be skills and there can be useful things to know, I still think it maybe creates the situation where it's really hard for then, you know, the one who's actually pregnant to make the choice of, like, but what will I need during that experience? And whether it's someone who's learnt those skills through a more holistic route, rather than the NHS or some other organisation, I still wonder whether both camps maybe bring in this idea that physical things need to be rectified during labour and birth. Like, I know, and in some instances they will, but then the majority they won't, and then it's that expectation. And I guess it comes back again to, I guess, working on your fear and your kind of real mindset around birth. But yeah, I don't know. There's always a little bit in my mind that's wary about, or is still always going to question the alternative, because I still think it's healthy to do that. Because I'm is it just something in a different kind of look, but not quite addressing what needs to be addressed?
I hear you, but I want to throw in there for your thinking that ultimately choice is, healthy choices is what we want to be available for parents. And there are some parents that really want, if a situation arises, for it to be resolved properly. They don't have that as a choice really at the moment, because you've got most people that have been taught the poor way of doing things and coercive behaviour, etc., by the current model of maternity services, the NHS. And some people would actually like a useful mind, heart and hands without all the coercion and violence that we have in our current maternity system. So I would like that to be available as a choice. I feel like I am part of that choice. And then I will also be contacted by people that say, I absolutely want an autonomous free birth and to roll with whatever happens. And then I can I can affirm them in that desire too, and say, well, if that's what you want, you might want to look at this. You might want to look. So it's, for me, it's just healthy choice being available.
Yes.
But absolutely, Tori, I'm not saying that you should make that choice. Oh, you should have a birth keeper, or you should. I'm not that person. I'm just saying we're available and in that guise with that background if you want us.
That's it. Yeah. Go on, Leonie.
No, just to add another angle into that mix that is, it's really good to ruminate on. I think another question we can ask is, what don't I want? So if I opt in for this, I am learning more about what that means, and I don't want that, and I don't know what I do want, but I'm just going to walk away from that, and I don't know where I'm going. And one of my favorite birth affirmations, I guess, but is preparing to birth alone if needed, because it could be that you don't find what you need yet, but if you know that it's still better than birthing in a shitstorm, then that's got to be better, surely. It's hard to get there as well, but just that's got to be a factor. What don't I want, and can I walk away from that into the unknown?
I agree 100%.
Yeah,
I love this conversation, because, and especially I love the way you both express discomfort with an idea, because it leaves the way open for more questioning. And I don't think, with regard to this very special, amazing thing of the way we procreate, the way we replenish our planet, I don't think there are any questions that ought not to be asked. I don't think there's any assumptions that can be made. And I think, you know, amongst so much other gold from this conversation, definitely I hope, you know, it might be irritating for some, because a lot of people just want to be given the answers.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Yeah. Just tell me what to do.
Just tell me what to do.
Yeah.
But the way we are loving you and serving you, the listener, is by hopefully promoting more questions.
Yeah, that really is it, isn't it? Yeah, that really is it. I think the more time goes by, it's the more if I feel like I'm going down one little path where I'm trying to kind of get to the bottom of something, it's like, okay, that's fine and that's interesting for me, but it's always about this person. Always bring it back to them, like, what do they want to do and what are they feeling? Like, it's not about trying to find the answer for everybody. It's about going back to that individual and going, yes, but what about you? Like, what's coming up for you? What do you need? And that's where you've always got to keep bringing it back to. And like you say, yeah, totally, it can be choice. It's a personal choice. But then that means it's the choice you're making rather than the one that's right for everybody. But I get that. Yeah, oh, it's so interesting. But it is frustrating, because I wish there was an answer. Like, I just wish there was one thing.
Bit
how
neater,
great would that
it?
Be? Yeah. You would be nice. But it would make for less fun conversation, so that would be that.
Yeah.
This has been really lovely. Thanks, Kemi, for your time on this. It's been really lovely to get into the kind of nitty gritty and really kind of break this over. Thanks so much for bringing all your thoughts and insight.
Thank you so much.
For the
space to have it. Leonie, thank you. And Tori and Leonie, you're such a great team when it comes to deep conversation that leaves you with more power. Ultimately, you definitely don't infantilize your listeners. These are very grown up conversations. These are very grown up conversations, and I'm grateful to you for that.
Thank you for just everything that you do.
You're welcome.
Definitely, and we'll leave
thank
all
you
the
to everything that you do.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll leave all the links and everything in our show notes, and we will link back to your page. And obviously, I mean, I'm sure people that listen to you, I feel like they're going to follow you anyway, but you know, for those who don't know Kemi Johnson, then they can go and check you out and start following you, and then start following you, unfollowing you, coming back and to and fro, or whatever they want to do along the way.
To and fro. We're good.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, thanks so much, Kemi.
Thank you, Kemi.
Thank you, Leonie. Thank you, Tori.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you've enjoyed this, please take a screenshot, pop it on your social media, put it up on your stories, tag us. We love to see that, and your support means so, so much to us. Help us get the word out. Help us help more people listen to amazing free birth stories. And if you're looking for free birth support, Leonie and I both offer one-to-ones and various other lovely tasty offerings. So do check out our Instagram accounts. That's at free to birth for myself and at birthwise.withleonie for Leonie. And lastly, make sure you hit subscribe wherever you are listening to us so you never miss an episode.